With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Discussing local, national, and international issues. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour is filmmaker Nicole McCaw. But let me tell you a little bit about what's going on before we introduce you, because there's a lot to discuss in this hour. And of course, anyone who's been following along what's happening both in the United States and of course here in Australia is very concerned now about various different border crises happening in the US and in Australia. People scratching their heads, wondering how it is that we can acknowledge what is said to be a terror attack inside a church, but seem to have unbridled immigration at records levels we've never seen before, three times what we've had in the past year for immigration in Australia, wondering what's the point of big Australia if we can't walk out the front door and just feel like that we're living in the country that we were born in. And I don't think that is too much of a xenophobic statement. It's just a question, arguing for balance. And I think it's the balance here that we're going to see from Nicole in a moment. And as many people may be aware, various news reports are talking about the aggressive side of the ongoing crisis for the border in the US and how many seem to manage to slip into the country. A new article from the Epoch Times points out a more tragic side, one that is affecting rescue crews in Texas. The legendary Rio Grande River has become a boon for Eagle Pass Fire Chief Manuel Mello and his fellow first responders as they continue to pull bodies out. Migrants and their families attempting to enter the United States. They are seeing record numbers of drowned men, women, and children who perish while crossing the river from Mexico into the US, according to the report. Mello recently spoke to a congressional committee about everything him and his team have seen. There are days it seems that ambulance wails never stop. So joining us now to discuss this further is Nicole McCaw. She's a host and producer with NTD Television, currently serves as producer and host for Border Wars, which is a new documentary that follows her and her crew as they look at the trials and tribulations occurring at the US-Mexico border. Her expertise makes her the ideal guest for our show. Nicole, welcome to Weekends and TNT.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, likewise, it's wonderful to have you on the show. And goodness me, your timing is just so pertinent as we look here in Australia at the disaster that's happened over the last few days. Two stabbings in Australia, seemingly unrelated, but 3 days apart, one on Saturday, one on a Monday. And the people starting to scratch their heads, wondering, is there an ulterior motive in all of this? Because it just seems to be too close together. It will have people begging for their own security. And there's this whole ulterior motive situation going on that's very, very disturbing. People, of course, concerned that we here might in Australia might think of the political solution, never let a crisis get in the way. Does that mean facial recognition is the next thing off on the agenda? Is it for digital ID to make sure that we know who everybody is at one particular time? It just seems that these great leaps forward, that the general public is pushed into a state of permanent fear and we can't have a rational discussion. So really what we need to do is just get back to the facts of what's going on. So I guess this is the important part when we start our discussion. As a filmmaker, the US-Mexican border crisis, I mean, it's so obvious, the numbers that are coming through. What made you realize at this point that this was the real problem that was going on here, that it seemed that literally the gates were open to anyone and everyone?
In the United States, I'm from the center north, so the Midwest. And I never really thought the southern border would have anything to do with me and my family. I don't live near Texas or Mexico. What could that have to do with it? You know, I'll share a personal story from my heart to yours. My nephew overdosed on fentanyl and three times in 48 hours. And with that being said, this is what prompted me to find out as a journalist who has a background, 15 years working as a local reporter for the Epoch Times and the ARM NTD TV News. And so I wanted to find out, are there women and children being hurt at the border? Am I a racist for saying, hey, what about the safety of the children and the efficacy of them coming through the border? So when we went down there, three gentlemen accompanied me with me, my cinematographer, my sound gentleman, and a security gentleman who donated his time. So we went to the border. And we're going to talk about, you know, Eagles Pass that you just mentioned briefly. We're going to talk about that place exactly. when I went there, I discovered something very unique for myself as an average American. I come from a Democrat household, come from the blue collar worker. So what I thought was interesting is when we were on a 200 gaming acre ranch along this river in Eagles Pass, we ran ops. We detained 100 illegals in one night. 48 were men. The rest were children who were zip tied and sedated on Zoloft. Now, when we called the ambulance and they came, they said, oh yeah, these children are on Zoloft, as if they have been experiencing it, as if it's normal. When the linguist asked these guys, where's the mother? Where's the grandma? They all said, we're getting a divorce at 3:32 a.m. at the Texas-Mexico border. I mean, you guys aren't going to a play park. It's 3:30 in the morning. Where could you possibly be going with these children? So these were some of the things that we discovered, as well as 60 to 80% of the women and children making it to that border are being raped on American soil. In places like Arizona, places like New Mexico, Texas, this is where these things are happening. Trafficking has gone up exponentially. I mean, we're talking about a market that is a $500 billion international industry fueled by the open borders here in the United States, where the number one consumption of child pornography.
Nicole, these numbers are staggering. The allegations are common. This is not something necessarily new, but the difference is now that you're seeing it in real time. The fentanyl crisis on its own is beyond tragic. It's beyond lethal. The human trafficking, the rape that goes on US soil. To think that there are that many creeps that are walking the earth, and I mean, this is a fair comment, right?
Very fair. It's very fair. Something that I found astonishing and mind-blowing is that these are all human beings. And so when you take a look at these politicians here in the United States, and maybe you feel the same way in Australia, I would love to hear that when on both sides of the party, open borders, free everything, the only time we've heard these types of promotions and understandings is through communism, when they're trying to bring a free capitalist nation down through the preamble of socialism to the final boss level, is what I like to call it, of communism, where you have things thriving like fentanyl. Can you imagine if an airplane going to Australia, Sydney, every day 400 people died, every day you heard 400 people died today in a Boeing 747 here in Sydney, Australia. Again today, 400 people died. Well, again today, 400 people died year after year. That is what the United States is facing right now with the fentanyl crisis. And can we just talk a few seconds about who's behind this?
Please do.
Oh, so I know I'm getting wild about this. But this is, I'm an average American, okay? I do reading, I'm out there, I'm talking to people, I'm getting the questions in, and we're talking to these senators and representatives. We're reading DOD reports, Homeland Security reports, working with former special forces from state to state with private eyes, investigating, going on the streets to look at how does this sex trafficking work. If the United States is supposed to be the World War champions back to back to help stop communism, Why are we fueling it? Why are we enabling this? And the devil's within the walls. We have found in our film, if you guys go to borderwarsdoc.com, you guys will see in that film there that the government, we have evidence that says, yes, the United States government is complicit in child sex trafficking and fueling the fentanyl crisis by not shutting down the factories with the Chinese Communist Party, but continuing to doing business with them. Did you know that the People's Republic of China funds Americans, PNC medical groups, to create these synthetics to go into fentanyl, only if they promise not to sell it in China?
It's unbelievable, isn't it? The level of obfuscation, if you will, the idea that we will distract you in one direction with another. And I know that we're again, there's two subjects here. There's the fentanyl subject and there's the sex trafficking subject. But technically, it's all organized crime, if you will. It's not disorganized crime or sporadic. What really concerns me here is that how we can have a situation in the COVID era that nobody was allowed to step one foot out of line to defend Nana, the idea that we have to put a mask on for the elderly, et cetera, the only disease in the world that we didn't care about the children, we cared about the elderly. When we look at this from the sexual trafficking, rape, sexual abuse crisis that's going on here, we're all very aware of the Jeffrey Epstein story. We're all very aware of what's happened. We're very aware that there's been no announcement of any of the of Ghislaine Maxwell's clients in the book, et cetera, et cetera. It seems to me that the what's happening now with the human trafficking crisis is it's obvious that there can either be a lid put on it, and that means that there is massive denial from the general public. They just pretend it doesn't go on. But for those that do, it seems that if you put this massive border crisis, human trafficking, in front of your eyes, it's more time delay on the Epstein story. You can separate them, and therefore you make this as big as possible. We never have to deal with him. Does that argument have merit from the same way that the fentanyl crisis has been distracted by what you've just said about China, et cetera? It just seems that we are deliberately being confused here. There's no intention to get to the bottom of anything.
When you have a society that is solely focused on overindulgence, and you have these chemicals that are breaking down the mind and the body, you know, the frontal lobe helps us have wisdom and discernment on breaking down what is truth and what is lie. You know, when I tell you something, your mind will say, is that a truth? Is it a lie? Well, these types of the video games, the social medias, all of the processed foods, the GMOs, all of that stuff that's being consumed in, right? Then we have all of these informations, you know, Sean Diddy comes, is he the Black Epstein of Hollywood? You know, is Jay-Z going to get in trouble? Well, what about the 300 missiles Iran just sent over to the Iron Dome? A lot of these things, I think, are used to confuse people so they can't focus on the soul mission. And here's why, like the soul agenda. When you put red ants and black ants together in a jar, they don't fight. But when you shake it, they kill each other. And I feel that's what's happening. And I know in my heart, people are wiser than that. And I think that because of the tribulations, and there's so many different kinds of people, wonderful, good people out there, that it's going to take multiple case scenarios for each one of us to experience it in order to make a true choice. Because that's what it seems like to me, that we're at the precipice. What do you think?
This is the point. This is what we've been battling with for such a long time now. Now, I trace it back to the moment that, would you believe, Bernie Sanders walked out in April of 2015 and announced he was running for president. Now, the reason I say that is that Barack Obama was literally, as Mark Latham, an Australian politician, says, was called the Black Jesus. He was meant to be the political messiah. And it's a fair it's a fair comment. But he completely disappointed when he came in on a platform of hope and revolution. And I remember a quote that he said that he preferred incrementalism. And I thought, oh, here we go. We've just got an establishment hack. He actually made that comment. I used to make the point, after being so disappointed after 9/11, that if Bush was serious, he would have caught bin Laden. And I used to say that if Obama would catch bin Laden in his term of office, that would legitimize him, that he wasn't necessarily a puppet. Then when bin Laden was supposedly caught and dumped into the sea without a single photograph being taken, you're like, oh, come on, we've just been taken for a ride all over again. It was at that point that I walked away from Obama and realized it was just the same old, same old. So this is why I came to Sanders. When he came out, breath of fresh air, people thought, okay, well, this is fair enough. There is a minimum wage problem. There's a tertiary education problem, and there's certainly a healthcare problem for average working class Americans. All sounded great until he said that he would challenge that convention with Hillary Clinton and capitulated on the spot. And then there were millions of Americans who were completely disenfranchised at that point. So for me, this was a turning point for me from a political perspective. But it wasn't just me. It was the thousands of people that had all been Bernie Sanders followers was on social media. 90% of them, the day Trump was elected, automatically became Trump supporters through no organization whatsoever. They just flipped the script and they were just reporting positive news from Trump and explaining things. And it blew my mind to realize that people were no longer concerned with the badges of left and right when the real issues were at play here. And those real issues, Nicole, were the same ones. It was about children, it was about criminality, it was about Hillary and the server, and it was about the fact that the government lies to its people and pretends to go and fight wars for democracy. And people were having none of this anymore. So we saw what really went on here was that those that were really observant were no longer tolerating the nonsense and the lies coming from the government. And I think that was the clincher for me, that I realized that there was a basis here. What we find really hard, though, and this is what I find disturbing, I talk about it a little bit, is that within the so-called freedom, truth movement, etc., there's a lot of what we call in Australia white-anting. The termites get in and they rip it up from inside. And they call people who don't agree with the latest rabbit hole some form of controlled opposition. And so they're always chasing after the next big, you know, secret conspiracy, etc., but not staying behind to do the hard yards, which means to turn stories such as the border crisis into mainstream news that are now undeniable. And this is the big clincher that I find the problem. So Nicole, you're doing that work at the forefront, but at the same time, you are totally aware of the big picture, but you can't just keep chasing down rabbit holes and not doing anything and just throwing it up there and expecting someone else to pick up. Someone has to do the hard work. That's where my perspective comes into all of this. How does that feel?
I think that's wonderful. I think it takes many, you know, this entire, on an overall higher perspective, sometimes I like to look at things dialectically. Okay, because that's the type of society we live in. You wouldn't know good without the bad. And when we take a look at this as the whole, I think that there's a lot of good that is happening out of these tragedies, because there's so many people like you and your show and the researchers, everyone who's working on your show, all of your subscribers who are behind you, who are turning in. These grassroots movements, this is how we get the game won. Mm. Now, I would love to say a little fun little history, because this is, you know, the lying legacy media in every country wouldn't be alive without the fear, murder, fear. Okay. Right. They wouldn't be alive. Every day they were saying it's hope. It's amazing. Tuna, it's butterflies. Okay. Everyone's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to eat my food here. Okay. And so what I want to say is that it only took 2% of the colonial population in the United States to create an army that outbeat, outstrategized, hung in there, and they went up against the largest, most financially secure organization in the world. So it's the old 80-20 rule. I believe in my heart that in the end, it will be the 20 that saves the 80, and we're working up to, it took thousands of years before the colonials said, okay, we're done with you, King James. We're annoyed with the communism, socialism. We're smelling it. You know, shite is shite. We're going to keep going.
Perfect. It's such a nice way to have a positive spin on all of it, and to realize that you don't need to be 51% in order to switch a narrative. You just got to create a better argument. And that's the point where we're going here, which I find incredibly powerful, and realizing that there is a determination to buck the system, to outplay the system. And what we're noticing now, and this is the other thing, of course, before we go to our first break, is that the independent media is getting better and better at their work. A perfect example in Sydney this week, last week, I should say, with the attacks there, and just seeing the differences in citizen journalism. There were some errors made, but those errors were actually magnified by mainstream news. Channel 7 confirming an incorrect fact, naming the wrong person as the killer, was something extraordinary here. And it was the citizen journalists for the Main who were showing inordinate restraint. And we must give ourselves a little bit of credit for being able to do that as we improve week on week each day. It's no different to a sports star that makes it to the international arena and gets in and has a poor performance at the beginning, and all of a sudden 6 months, 12 months later, that person is now breaking records around the world. It's the same way. You have to start, you have to do the hard work, and of course that's where all of a sudden there is that great big switch. And I'm very encouraged by what you've said. Now we will take that first break, and I just want to say, don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play, so you can easily watch or listen live to us anywhere, anytime. It's available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on today's news talk, TNT.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket-propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like Latoya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
Latoya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Everyone deserves to live a full life. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, filmmaker and journalist Nicole McCaw. Nicole, in the first segment, you brought up the fact that you discovered that children at the border were being given Zoloft. In fact, you were told that they were under the influence, let's say, of Zoloft. What's going on here? This is an antidepressant. Why would children escaping Mexico or somewhere else to get into the United States be doped up on an antidepressant given to adults?
This was something that I actually found really shocking. And the team that when we went out together after that night, there was a couple nights that we went back to the hotel rooms and we just cried as mothers, as fathers, and just like, how could anybody zip tie the white little things, you go, and you're, This was something that was unbelievably disturbing. And talking to Border Patrol, talking to the local police, you know, they're so disenfranchised because they want to do their job. But because the current administration right now, they're going after these individuals. And when they explain to me, when they're bringing these children across, the children are making noise, they're crabby, they're energetic. They had to get them across. So an antidepressant is going to sedate them and make them seem in like a sleeping state. Like, oh, look at my baby is sleeping. But no, like I said, there was no mothers. There was no grandmothers. It was all children. They're maybe under the ages of 14. The rest of these kids, I mean, we're talking 52 children. 52 children. I have one son that's 13. And when they sedate the children, it makes them easier to move. They're not making as much recognitional noise. So the Border Patrol won't say, oh, is this your mom or this your dad? They don't even speak to the children. Some of the places are so busy with obtaining so many children illegally coming in that the military police and Border Patrol are changing diapers and feeding children rather than getting these gotaways. There was a gentleman, I don't know if you had seen this, I know you keep up on a lot of international news. This happened in the state of Georgia here 2 months ago. There was a girl, Lincoln Riley. She was a medical student and she was murdered by a guy who had 7 fake names, was exported under the Trump administration from his crimes against humanity here in the United States. And then he snuck back in under the current Biden administration and then killed this beautiful young girl who was a rising star in her medical class. So these are the crimes that every community, every country is facing.
We saw it here in Australia. We saw 6 innocent people taken out at Westfield at Bondi through a stabbing. And the question's now being asked is, well, what should we do? Like, at what point can you have some form of self-defense? For example, here in Australia, you may or may not be aware, but in 1996, we had what was dubbed the Port Arthur Massacre, where one lone gunman with an IQ under 100 was meant to have shot 35 people with semi-automatic weapons in the most disgusting and horrific of circumstances. This person never went to trial, was never charged with the crime, but is in jail indefinitely, and that was used as the pretext to buy back all of the guns, particularly unregistered guns here in Australia. So we had the biggest buyback ever. So Australia technically at this stage is considered to be unarmed at that point. So much so that the security guards, one of the security guards was one of the victims of the attack at the Bondi Westfield. He was a Pakistani immigrant and he was, it was his first day on the job. So here's a man who sadly did not have enough training, certainly didn't have any method to defend himself against one man. And you would have thought that a security guard at the very least would carry a baton or something on his hip that he'd be able to get out and swing and give him some reach to get against this particular man with a knife. And this was not the case. So people are now asking, at what point is the level of balance? Where does Australia go? Should our security guards be armed? The old days that the jeweler who was carrying lots of gold and obviously wealthy, expensive pieces of items of value would carry a gun. But of course, those days are over. So this is the hard part now that we're seeing, that there is this idea that you can be living an innocent life, but you're defenseless. So surely that is too far going the other way, Nicole.
I do think that, you know, when we take a look at, I love to talk about numbers and statistics just because majority of the time, maybe only the numbers don't count in U.S. elections, but they count in other areas. And when we take a look at, you know, deaths by food or deaths by forks, one of the number one deaths in the United States is literally by a butter knife. Second is by food, obesity. So, I mean, this is where you have to start asking, how was that guy who decided to be mentally unhealthy, I mean, what was his background? What was happening there? These are the type of things that need to be addressed, because I would love to think that it's okay for me to walk into Juarez, Mexico. Nothing's going to happen to me. I'm not going to be raped. I'm not going to be sold for my kidney. But that's not the case, because we've seen the crimes gone up exponentially. We've seen that people's moral fibers in their hearts have been lowered to a very rock bottom line. And so I think these are some of the things that need to be addressed. And as politicians who are being voted in, it is the locals' duty, everyone's duty, everyone in Australia to say, hey, I don't like this. I don't like what you're doing. And they need to go hard on it. I keep saying the grassroots movements is where we need to start. Now, if you look, now I'm not promoting Hitler here, but he was smart as far as the grassroots movements. The feminists, smart. They use the grassroots movements, right? They start with these little pockets and they get together and they're chit-chatting and they're getting motivated and then they're making little clubs and then they're doing incremental little changes. And like a rainstorm, each raindrop creates the puddle, which creates the big wave. And that's where I'm saying, get excited, get little, join your local government clubs, start calling these representatives and say, hey man, I'm paying your paycheck. Get excited. We don't like this. They play chicken. They talk a lot. They puff a lot. They make a lot of noise. But when you put a little pressure on, they bow down.
Oh, yes. absolutely. Well, we had a situation, again, it's interesting that this conversation keeps leapfrogging from the US back to Australia. Just recently in our Senate, now we have a parliamentary, Westminster parliamentary system of government. If you pass a bill, it goes through the House of Reps, then it goes to the House of Review, the Senate, for, you know, adjustment, et cetera, whatever. Well, our digital ID bill that miraculously seems to pop up all around the world at all the same time, but no one knows that this is actually an agenda. It was sent straight to the Senate before the House of Representatives to start its process, and the government of the day said there'll be no debate. It was just put into the Senate, voted on, and then the finance minister came out and said, congratulations, we just got the digital ID bill through the Senate, which for most people meant that it had been passed. This is how dishonest this situation is. It of course, forced me to write to the Prime Minister, who then wrote back within a few days and said, well, this has got to go to the Finance Minister and maybe some other departments based on the questions raised. I then shared this open letter to others to encourage them, because this is where we are today, is that people probably feel intimidated. They don't want the government to know who their what their name is. Let's say they could be considered a dissident. Now, this is the part of the political process in a democracy. You're allowed to ask questions. So I ask people to use this particular resource to either slab copy it and use it, take part of it, take the sentiment, but use it as some sort of situation. I said, how good would it be if 10,000 people sent the same letter to the Prime Minister? What if it were 1 million people? This is the point. Now, I've got people in my family who've been involved in the political system, and they used to complain. They said, if you get 5 letters on a given day about the same subject to a minister's office or an MP's office, they go into a tailspin. They literally panic, just like you said. That's how small it is. And so it's not 10,000. It's not 1 million. It's literally 5. And so that can be organized at a simpler level. And of course, you want it to be organic. You don't want it to be a manipulation, but you do want it to reflect the situation of the day. So I'm glad that we can both sort of discuss this idea that there is a practical place for this process of using democracy for democracy. It's ironic, if we just completely go to the other side of the world, that NATO is defending Ukraine, where Zelensky cancelled the elections and they call it democracy. How can you cancel an election and say we're defending democracy? Because that sets up for, in the US coming up to November, what if there's a war here and Joe Biden goes, well, we're not going to have an election now. We're in a war that we've been trying to start for the last 2 years. So you can see again this manipulation again. And so it does take the individual to say, well, you know what? I'm not waiting for anyone now. I just need to write one letter of complaint and maybe check with my friends and see if they want to write one too. And then I'm not alone in this either. So putting all that together, I mean, isn't it obvious now that America is almost anti-democratic using it? It's a total projection.
I do agree with you. I do think that a lot of people do get scared because I don't know if you like a lot of like American movies, but Keanu Reeves, do you know who he is?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so I just wasn't sure. I don't want to assume. I'm not quite sure, and I want to be disrespectful. And so he made a series of movies, John Wick. And in those series of movies, I love the John Wick movie series. Oh, man, the guns in there. Woo! So good. And they killed the idea of John Wick, right? Not John Wick himself, but they killed the idea. And so I feel like with January 6th, with your shooter that happened and with the other incidents that happened, these governments in Australia's governments, in Europe, in the United States, they use these as a form of manipulation for people. But if we realize that we don't have to function out of fear, because fear is irrational, right? It's not real. Fear is not, danger is real, but fear is not. People can start getting brave and, like you said, trickle in. I'm telling you, keep getting excited. Keep doing what you're doing. This is exciting. What else are we doing? Enjoying our 5-star Wagyu steaks on our boats and having hibachi? I mean, really, what are we really doing?
isn't that interesting? Because if you go back and look at the last 4 years, and of course the world changed in 2020, but many of us in that period of lockdown, particularly here in Australia where it was drawn out for some time, we certainly changed the way that we lived our lives. In my own family, we realized just how much money we threw away on rubbish that we didn't have to do anymore. We changed everything. How much did your life change during that period?
My family and I started a farm. We had 40 chickens, 2 pigs. We also realized how much money we wasted and how focused we were on materialism.
Isn't that interesting? It's so interesting because at the same time we saw crazy things like the price of a second-hand motor vehicle almost doubled for certain cars because there was no supply, and people thought that they were on this weird sort of boon that you could invest in anything now. And then the government threw money at the people by allowing them to access their retirement funds, which we call superannuation. You could take $10,000 out, then I think a second $10,000 out. So people were spending money again on, you know, overpaying for cars or using them for home deposits, etc. But some people got a little bit clever and they took out their retirement money, which they weren't allowed to invest in precious metals, but in the stock market, and they bought $10,000 worth of silver bullion, for example. Now, if you're looking at the price of silver bullion today, all of a sudden there's a great return because the price of gold and silver seems to have gone through the roof. So there's it's quite interesting, isn't it, that process actually returned a benefit rather than being wholly a disaster if you knew what you're actually watching, which is testimony to what you've said before, is to trust yourself and your intuition, and the world, a pathway almost opens up for you in real time.
I do think that. I think that people are wiser than they think. And I think that people have more good in them. I mean, we all have the dichotomy of good and evil within. It's upon our choice which one we choose. Are we going to choose what's easy? Or are we going to choose what's right? And when you look at the cyclical cycle of every single great country in this world, you will see that they've gone through the same cyclical cycles where it was really great, it was on the up, things started to get weird, things got super weird, and then it crashed really bad, and the good rose up from the ashes. I'm telling you, that's where we're going. The good is on its way back. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's isn't it wonderful to be incredibly encouraged by what's going on? Nicole, completely different subject just for a moment, and we're going to go to a break in a moment. I just want to talk about this because we're going to talk about Epoch Times and its links, obviously, with China, etc., in terms of a perspective. Electric vehicles. I know that in the United States, there seems to be a huge glut. They don't seem to be getting sold. We're hearing of, in China, for example, a backlog of five-year-old electric vehicles sitting on a lot to go somewhere. Do you think that this is almost a catalyst for the understanding of just how crazy agenda politics can get things wrong on a trajectory, that this is one of those things that might be where the individual person not necessarily paying attention going, where did all these cars come from and what's going on here?
You know, China produces 97% of the materials for these batteries. So it's no wonder that they've made these presumptions. I mean, the Wuhan virus, the China virus. Now, if you guys take the opportunity to go to borderwarsdoc.com where my film is, in the film, we found a speech from 1929 from Mao Zedong himself. We had it translated, and in that translation, he vowed to take down Western white societies through manufacturing synthetic drugs and selling them back to them, where we are today, exactly where he said in 1929. This is where the CCP has an agenda. They are patient and they are diligent, but their communism is the only theology form of government that takes humankind as its enemy, its mortal enemy. Yeah. This is something to take into consideration.
That is so well said, and I do want to talk about that a little bit more. What we'll do is we'll take a quick break and be back with more. You're watching and listening to Weekends with Jason Olborn here on TNT.
TNT's State of the Nation.
So Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. You know, Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
Yeah.
the mighty might not see it coming. It's prediabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1-minute prediabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
My name's Stacy. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You. And you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete, but it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour is Nicole McCaw, who happens to be the filmmaker who has put together this incredible film called Border Wars. And you can look it up, borderwarsdoc.com, for all the details there, etc. And it's a film that you must see, particularly if you're concerned about what's really going on and want to show the facts to others who don't understand exactly what's going on. Now, before the break, Nicole, you brought up the idea that communism is the only political ideology that considers the people its enemy. And people might say, well, hang on, what are you talking about? Don't we talk about socialist utopia, the idea that you share for everyone? But when you consider the Chinese government might have one rule for thee, but it has one rule for me itself, it's a completely different scenario that the rules don't apply. What I'm seeing now in the West is this same pretend caring for the people, a socialist utopia, if you will, but really it hates on the people. For example, if you say, you know what, I don't need to take a medicine for somebody else, which is how it's been sold to me, and suddenly I'm the enemy. But heaven forbid if I show you proof through evidence and facts, etc., that show you that I was actually right in the first place, that one, I didn't need to take your medicine, and two, if I did, it would be to my own detriment. And therefore, one wonders, is this weird two-speed ideology within government to allow ignorance to justify that a utopia, when in fact it's the exact opposite, it's to our peril.
Absolutely. You know, I read this incredible volume series called How the Spectre is Ruling the West. And it showed me through the new age movements, these threads that are getting spun into all of our societies. And it's through hatred, okay? And I think you're spot on the money. And communism, you know, Karl Marx and Frederick Raelynn, they got together, they were besties and they were Satanists. And they wanted to disprove that, you know, humankind was made from the divine. And so they use the black magic to summon the voice of Satan. You can read this in the Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, his biography. You can read it in there. And he brags about using the black magic to summon the voice of Satan, to create communism, to create Marxism. And he contributes his success to the French Revolution through that, the feminist movement. And each time we see these movements, they're full of hate and murder and aggressiveness through separation and division. Fast forward to, you know, what you mentioned about the World Economic Forum. I agree with you. We were talking about that earlier. Through these hatred movements, they're able to divide individuals and use these communist tactics to divide the people in order to create this agenda, whether it's depopulation, selling us fake medication and agendas, making us feel fearful from the world and what's happening outside of our own countries. And every single time, and this is just what grinds my gears. It just leads back to communism, which trickles back down to the evil. So to me, it validates that human beings are made in the image of the divine and that they're special, because a robber won't rob an empty home. He's not going there for nothing.
Well said. It's interesting, isn't it, that that the more you look at it, you cannot separate the political from the spiritual. And some might say that you can't have a political solution to a spiritual problem. And therefore, that's why we seem to not be able to connect these two parallel lines, if you will. But when you firstly realize that those in power are summoning Satan or have this particular agenda, then you realize that atheism, the belief that there is nothing, that it's just the theory of evolution, if you will, you realize that that becomes the gatekeeper to Satan. Where I'm going with that is that if the government, if we're told to believe in government and not God, and government has this particular bent, then therefore by definition, you are a believer in government, therefore an atheist, but you don't see what's really going on there. It's what taught me that there must be a creator as such, and if anything, opened my eyes to the fact that that the only answer really is a spiritual one, which I just find fascinating. Have you considered it from that perspective, like almost like that in the middle ground, the atheists are the gatekeepers?
You know, I also myself have found myself coming to that precipice where over the last 10 years, being really rooted in understanding the Chinese Communist Party, what communism really is and how they, you know, one of the groups that helped open my eyes to the understanding of religious persecution is the same as political persecution is actually the prisoners of Falun Gong in China. Actually, there was several amazing Australians that I had the privilege to meet that went there in 1999 to head up to meet in Tiananmen Square to say, Falun Gong is good. Don't listen to the Chinese Communist Party. Be a free thinker. And they were from Australia. They were the most amazing people and touched my heart. Just quick little side personal story there. You know?
That's nice.
And so through this experience, I have found that we are in a spiritual battle. I do truly feel that because we keep going down to the communism, the atheism. And when we look at all these movements, such as the feminism, these LGBT movements, these trans community movements, the BLM movements, Antifa movements, they're all, a lot of this stuff is in fact rooted in these types of satanic type of modules. This is what I found just from personal research. And I mean, I've been on tour for the past 3 years across the country, state to state, speaking to every person from every background and over 100 different countries.
Now, when you think about the border crisis, and you are at the forefront, so you're one of the most qualified to look at this, have you considered what are the ulterior motives of opening the border? I mean, the obvious one is that you bring in a bunch of people under one particular regime and they're meant to support the Democrats through this, the idea that you can blur the edges, bring in 20 million people, that technically that's 15 million new voters, et cetera, that are going to vote for us. It just seems to be quite cynical. But is there another agenda, one of which might be that if you have 15 million new poor people, that you can usher in, for example, a universal basic income as one of these globalists' ideal social utopias? Could that be one of the reasons why it helps, again, support an agenda? What reasons have you seen, for example, that would support why they would open the borders anyway?
So one of the things that we did is we ran operations at night in Tennessee when everybody was telling everyone, oh, you're insane, you conspiracy theorists, they're not flying children illegally through these American Airlines and, you know, taking these children to unvetted homes. We said, okay, sure. You know, let me be wrong. Let me get my tinfoil hat out and be crazy, right? No, that wasn't the case. When we went to Tennessee, when we ran that footage with the proper channels and jurisdictions, we found Spirit Airlines, Frontier Airlines, and American Airlines indeed flying these children to these places of undisclosed locations. Do you know where they were hiring the Uber drivers and the Lyft drivers? Off of Craigslist for a $1,500 gift card. Then, once the drivers would pick up the kids would be handed by our government a tub with a cell phone, a brand new smartphone. They would have preloaded cash cards, clothes if they needed, blankets, pillows, all the provisions that they needed. And then they were given to a city. They would ask, where do you want to go? They already knew the city name. Now, here's one of my favorite questions. You don't have access to food and to water, or you don't have a vehicle you can drive, but somehow you can come from a second and third world country and make it here safely? Mm-hmm. Come on now. 2 + 2 = 5, my friend.
So what do you put it down to then? How far does this organization go back?
I think so. What we found is that after World War II, the communists had to get smart. They had to go back to the playbook. They had to say, okay, how are we going to be able to get this in? The United States is the only last bastion that is standing on a capitalism. Okay. We'll just say that because we know we're facing the socialism preamble here. Okay, we'll just leave it lightly at that. I think that when you allow these open borders, the chaos, the unsure of what's happening, you are bringing those people in to sell them for the socialism because you gotta make them thirsty for it. You gotta make them feel desperate, like they don't have anything. I go back to Hitler. I go back to Mao. I go back to Che Guevara. I go back to Stalin. What did they all say? Oh, the women, you need to be amazing. Oh, the minorities. Oh, the gays. Yes, yes, yes. They killed them all. They went through and killed all the gays. They went through and killed all the minorities. They went through and ravaged them all, locked them all up. So this is why I keep saying it's to bring the United States to communism, but they won't win. You want to know why?
Tell me.
Okay. Here's the thing. In the United States, we have 350 million people. That's it. Okay. We have 699 million registered guns. We have 25 trillion rounds of ammunition. That doesn't include unregistered, grandfathered weapons that are larger than to purchase legally, as well as military weapons. So I will tell you, they're testing the waters to see how far they can really go with it. And they're going to mess around and find out that the citizens here in the United States still feel happy to lay down the law.
Isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting, Nicole, that this is where you end up, that all roads lead to, would you believe it, despite the fact that under the Trump era of no new wars, et cetera, that civil war potentially is the last bastion where the people will just say enough is enough. And therefore, one will soon know whether those results of 2020 truly reflected the will of the people. Therefore, because I had Dave Hodges on the show last weekend from the Common Sense Show, and Dave reckons, according to his sources, etc., that the popularity of Joe Biden is so low in real terms, it could be less than 10%. And he says, if you're going to manipulate 2024, that is a lot of extra votes that you're going to have to come up with. It's virtually impossible. And that presents where we are now. So we're seeing that Donald Trump is in court over the Stormy Daniels case, which I thought was resolved years ago. We've now learned, I think Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen had an affair together and concocted something. That's something that seems to be seeping out.
We're obviously even signed the paper. She signed a statement with her name and the date that says she took hush money.
Yeah. It's just preposterous, isn't it? And yet, and poor old President Trump is sitting in court trying to stay awake, listening to it all. You've got wars on all fronts, etc., and of course the border crisis. So when you look at all of that, it seems very logical now that absolute power, which is the establishment coming out of the United States with its tentacles all around the world, is in a situation that they truly believe that they could lose power again. And this time, having spent their ammunition and their political capital, one would think that that this Donald Trump with true battle scars is not going to take prisoners this time. What do you think?
I don't think he's taken any prisoners. You know, I've had the privilege to do several events with President Trump. I was just there last week at a small soiree dinner that we had with General Flynn, a few Laura Logan, and a couple of individuals at a dinner. And we were discussing the 91 felonies and the January 6th. And, you know, he was talking about all these documents. There was like 600, 700 FBI agents that were already set up for January 6th. And here President Trump is sitting there, glowing, beaming, talking about this is the long game and how we're winning and this is what's happening. And because the lying legacy media doesn't pump anything else, you think that we're losing. This is what made me feel inspired. You know what? I don't care how wild and crazy you may think it is. We're going to come out in the end well and upright. I'm telling you, yes, the United States has done a lot of nefarious and horrible things. 100%. I am not discounting that. But what I'm talking about is all the good people within those countries like yours, like mine, like Europe, who are feeling this in their hearts, who are getting excited, seeing people like you interview others like Dave from the Common Sense Show. They're getting excited and they're making a movement. We're getting excited. I'm telling you. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Isn't it wonderful? Now, the other thing is, as we approach the end of our chat today, was that I look at it and I ask, okay, so we have an establishment government and we now have an alternate government in the Trump administration trying to return to office, completely different scenario. What happens if Trump is successful in draining the swamp? And as we know, the swamp is much bigger than a swamp. It's almost the Pacific Ocean when you consider the level of criminality. Do you ever consider what we do after that fact? In other words, to rebuild? And are you positive that we can create a brand new world that makes this one look like what it is, a prison planet?
I am. And why I say I'm confident that we would be able to put in the right people. Going, you know, in my state, I'm going to be running in 2026 for Congress. I live in the state of Florida. That's where I live. Naples is my district, District 313. And I will tell you, there are so many good citizens. It's just they don't have the cameras. They're not out there being interviewed. They're not out there on the shows because they're unsure what to do. So they're doing things locally. There's so many good people that will be able to be put in the positions who have the heart to say no. My bottom line is not selling me a 12-year-old little girl. My bottom line is not allowing the CCP to invest in Australian companies. My bottom line is I'm going to kick out all the CCP in Australia. They can just go back right back to the Republic of China. There are very good people out there just waiting for this divine arrangement who will be put into place. A lot of great people out there still.
And that's the wonderful thing, isn't it? The one thing we've learned here in Australia is that one is to develop a thick skin, which Donald Trump has shown more than any of us that it's possible. And the other thing, of course, is the ability to be self-sufficient. And I think COVID taught us that more than anything else. And once you are self-sufficient and have a thick skin, you're not susceptible to the criticism that you might get and want to join the pack to save face. Embarrassment and shame is a funny thing. It prevents people from doing almost anything. And once you escape that and realize that you've been sold a furphy, you move on and get on with the rest of your life. Now, unfortunately, we've run out of time. It's absolutely flown by. So, Nicole, I want to thank you for your time today on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm unbelievably grateful to you and your subscribers and your network. Thank you kindly.
Wonderful. And for those, please check out borderwarsdoc.com is where you're going to see Nicole's film and keep an eye out for what's going on. Well, that's it for the hour. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more here on Weekends here on TNT.